welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 266 of the podcast, and it is the 22nd of April 2016 as I record this. So today I have an interview with Rasana Atreya about self-publishing in India, which will be super interesting and useful for anyone interested in that market. And of course, remember, there are twice as many English speakers in India than the UK, and they are educated middle-class Indians with money. So a great market. And you know, I'm always banging the international drum. And since Amazon is investing heavily in India at the moment, I think there is a good reason to be looking east, and also it's a fantastic country. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But first of all, a little bit of a downbeat, because I want to comment on the death of Prince, which happened yesterday as I record this. And coming off the back of David Bowie and Alan Rickman in particular, as well as a whole load of other people, kind of celebrity people, it's was quite a shock, I think, especially as he was only 57. And the today there's been this outpouring of grief, and also last night near where he lived, a celebration of his creative body of work. And today lots of blog posts and newspaper articles about what he has achieved as a creator. And I was thinking about this a lot. I mean, one, I have on my wall, you know, what can I create today that impacts my long-term legacy? As in, I try and keep that long-term view all the time. Because if we get obsessed with how many sales we make today or this month, then we forget that the point of this is to A, enjoy the work, and the writing itself is the point, the how we get to know ourselves as creators by actually creating. And also that, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint, a bit of a cliche, but essentially we want to think about what we want to create in our whole lifetime. Also, considering that we may have a very short life. You know, I don't think Prince expected to die at 57, or David Bowie, you know, and we all know people who've died early. So we don't know how long we have ourselves. And we need to consider how we want to spend our short life and how we want to be remembered. So these are big questions, and they're things I think about a lot, which come through in my fiction. I do think about death. I think about God and spirituality and meaning and good versus evil, and all of those things come out in my fiction. And I was thinking about fiction because I often feel selfish when I write fiction. And I was trying to examine that feeling, the sort of, I don't have the right to spend the time writing fiction because, you know, I'm more useful if I serve my nonfiction audience. If I write another nonfiction book, I help more people. And a lot of you, and I just love meeting people and hearing by email and on Twitter that I've helped people with my nonfiction. And it's different with fiction. But then the thing is, you know, I have said before, I love Stephen King. And, you know, I would feel just as devastated when Stephen King dies, and how people have been talking about Prince. I don't think anyone would say that he should have felt guilty over creating the music he did. And by all accounts, he was an incredibly hard worker, a prolific creator. One article I read said he wrote 4 albums in the last year, which, you know, for those people who say writing at speed and writing quality don't correlate, to know about that. He also did all these live last minute events where he just kind of appeared in cities and played really close small gigs with people, and he had a dedicated fan base. So, you know, Prince created the music that he felt drawn to create, and people loved him for it. So why would anyone say that creating something that drives you is selfish? And why do I feel guilty about creating my fiction and spending time thinking about worlds that are different, or about supernatural things, about, you know, well, just writing things that are meant to be entertainment first and changing people's lives through fiction. Anyway, it's very hard to put into words this, but it's something I've been thinking about since last night when I heard, I was up quite late and heard about Prince and was, you know, really considering it over the night. And so I wanted to share that with you. So if you ever feel guilt about spending time on your creative work, I know often people think, oh, well, I must spend time with my family, you know, must concentrate on my work. I've got all of these things that I have to do. But you can change people's lives with fiction, what people might call entertainment, as much as you can with nonfiction. And with nonfiction, it seems much more easily measurable as to how you can touch people. But you can, you know, most people, when they think about their favourite books, they might well have a story in mind, not necessarily a how-to book. And yeah, so that's my big, deep and meaningful message. And yeah, go play some Prince, and that will, you know, that's probably what he would have wanted. Also on that note, reflecting on our mortality, a podcast I listened to this week was really brilliant. The Tim Ferriss podcast, which I really enjoy, on the man who studied 1,000 deaths to learn how to live. A guy called BJ Miller, who lost 3 limbs in an accident, early 20s, I think, and now works in hospice care. And he talked about the importance of sensation and feeling the world through the senses and living in the moment in that way. And this is something that I've been thinking about also, because I've been doing a lot of walking. And those of you who listen to the show regularly might have heard that I'm in training for the Race to the Stones, which is in July, is 100 kilometers over 2 days. So you do 50 kilometers, then have a little bit of a snooze, and then get up and do another 50 kilometers. So this is quite hardcore, and some people run it obviously, but for me this feels quite hardcore. So I've been training a lot and walking, and I walk along the canal path near where I live in Bath now, and I tell you what, it's just been really interesting. I had thought I was going to write as I walked, as in I would dictate and get a lot done. What I found is, you know, some of the days I'm walking, you know, 5 hours, I'm doing sort of 25 to 30 kilometers. And I literally, I don't think I think very much at all. It's very strange. I almost think about nothing, and I don't want to write in quotation marks or dictate anything. I actually want to look at the water and listen to the birds and look at the flowers. The spring is here, and the leaves are coming out on the trees, and the buds are blooming. And it's very strange, because I'm not someone who meditates every day. You know, I don't do that. But what I am finding is I can walk for 5 hours and be in the moment as such and not really think much. I'm finding this incredibly useful for me as someone who is quite stressed and busy. Not stressed in a bad way, busy is probably a better word, especially over the last few weeks. You know, because I was in Austin and then I was at London Book Fair, and this introvert finds all of that quite hard. But earlier this week, I got up really early and went on this big sort of 5.5 hour walk, and I just felt so much better. So that's my, I guess my lesson learned this week is, as people who spend a lot of time in our heads, as writers and readers, a lot of stuff is in our heads, but we need to be physical and connect physically with the world in order to feel better, but also to live, I guess, to live more. And I'm off to Spain next week for a walking holiday. Because I'm doing this 2 days of walking, we needed to do some, you know, subsequent day walks. So we're doing 6 days in the Sierra Nevada mountains. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I wanted to ask you, what are you doing to make sure you look after your body and your mind, and yeah, and keep that mortality in mind, I guess, and look after yourself? There's too many authors who are getting burned out and, you know, wanting to give up. I'm going to come back to that in another show. Okay. Also, one more podcast I listened to this week that I really enjoyed was Austin Kleon, who wrote Steal Like an Artist and also Show Your Work. He was on the Unemployable podcast, which is one of my favourite shows, talking about stealing like an entrepreneur and how we can manage our creative input and output, as well as working analogue, you know, with your hand and paper, and also digital. So that's Austin Kleon on the Unemployable podcast. And BJ Miller on the Tim Ferriss podcast. Two things I recommend this week. Okay, also back on my writing. Personal update. I launched Destroyer of Worlds this week, book 8 in the Arcane Thriller series, although it can be read standalone as pretty much any of my books. And I'm really excited about it. It's one of those books. The first idea for this story came when I first saw a statue of Shiva Nataraja, who basically does the dance of destruction and recreation, destroys the universe with a dance. That's very cool. And I saw that in Delhi when I traveled to India back in 2006. So that is obviously a long time coming. And very happy to have that book in the world. Thanks to Dori Ross, who tweeted me, "My cat usually ignores my iPad mini, but she wasted no time snuggling up to the Creative Pen's latest book. Sent me a lovely picture of her cat snuggled up to Destroyer of Worlds on the iPad." Thank you, Dori. Really appreciate that. And also to Suki Jutla, who said she missed her train last night as so engrossed in the latest thriller, Destroyer of Worlds. Thanks, Suki. And I'm so glad you couldn't put that down. And I'm also doing some ads on Facebook, so we'll see how that goes. I don't tend to make too big a deal of my launches anymore, or perhaps I never have. You know, because I'm so focused on the long term, I don't tend to worry too much. And also, you know, you can't do paid promotions until you've got some reviews on the book. So I'll probably do some promotions once things have settled down a bit. But yes, Destroyer of Worlds out now, and an ancient weapon threatens the heart of India. So in publishing news this week, Smashwords CEO Mark Coker released the annual Smashwords survey results. However, it's important to remember that this is a Smashwords survey, so it will be skewed as it doesn't contain most Amazon sales. And also many of the bigger authors go direct. So for example, I go direct to Amazon, Kobo, iBooks, and also many people using Drafter Digital. So I just wanted to put that up front. It's a great, interesting survey, but as any publishing survey, any publishing industry information, it only is one snapshot, but very interesting things. A couple of things that Mark said, and I'll link to everything I talk about in the show notes. But the first thing is, better selling authors are much more likely to have a social media presence in the form of websites, blogs, Facebook, Twitter presence. So this is, and I was thinking about this, this is about staying top of mind and connecting with readers. So I was thinking about my own behaviour as a reader. When I am feeling like I want to read something, so I'd had a couple of books on pre-order, John Connolly's A Time of Torment. So John Connolly's one of my favourite authors. He writes similar to what I love to write as well as read, which is sort of thrillers with a supernatural edge. So I'd read A Time of Torment, and I wanted another book that would resonate with me in the way that John Connolly does. And I thought about, as a reader, okay, so I want to go to an author I trust who will give me a kind of guaranteed emotional experience that I enjoy in these books. So I actually will then go and have a look at who are my favourite authors, and either what have they released lately, or check out one of their backlists. And I actually picked up Do Marquee by Stephen King, which is one of his I haven't read. And it was really good. I loved it. And it was exactly what I wanted. So when Mark says, you know, having a social media presence, having being top of mind, this type of reader loyalty is something that you only get over time. And, you know, to have people that come back to you because they trust you, because they want this emotional resonance in their work. One, it means, you know, staying within brand, within one author name, but also building that up over time, building trust. Mark also found box set benefits. Although most box sets underperform the sales, they actually provide authors other benefits like revenue. So the sales, obviously sales numbers is one thing, revenue is another thing. So for me on Kobo, my highest revenue comes from box sets. And of course, there are two types of box sets. One is single author high value box set. And the other one is a multi-author low cost, low revenue, still high value, but as in on your own, you can do these sort of bundles. And then if you do it with other authors, it's usually for marketing purposes. So it's either revenue or marketing, but certainly box sets still haven't gone away. Also, on average, free books get around 41 times more downloads than books at any price. And a free first in series still works for iBooks, Kobo and Nook. Not sure how really well that works on Amazon anymore. It's questionable. But of course, if you have them free at the other stores, Amazon will price match anyway. Pre-order adoption increases. 13.5% of new books released at Smashwords are now started out as pre-orders, up from 9.8% in the prior period. And this is, I'm definitely, although I don't do my stuff through Smashwords, I've definitely moved into doing pre-orders. So Destroyer of Worlds has been on pre-order for a few months on Kobo and iBooks and Nook. And I only put it up on Amazon as a pre-order a couple of weeks before, just because it's a bit different with Amazon. But it does make your go live day very relaxed, because it all just happens and you don't have to worry about the books, loading up the books and when they'll go live. You just know that it will go live on that day. Also, I have already loaded End of Days as a pre-order on iBooks, Kobo and Nook. So people who pick up Destroyer of Worlds on those platforms will hopefully think about pre-ordering the next book. Certainly as a reader of established series, I really like to pre-order the next one. Even if it's a year away, I will pre-order authors I love. So I think that indies are getting into pre-orders, as this shows, and they can be very, very good. And as ever, series books significantly outsell standalones, and series with free series starters continue to earn more sales than series without free series starters. So a series with a perma-free first in series is still a recommended. So hopefully that's useful, some publishing tips there. And also another thing, I know this is a bit of a long introduction today, but over the next couple of weeks when I'm away, you will get shorter introductions. So I've also returned to direct sales this week. And this is a big deal for me, because I used to sell direct, as in I sold ebooks and audiobooks from the creativepen.com direct to customers. Then at the end of December 2014, the EU brought in the EU digital VAT laws, which basically were just a nightmarish sort of paperwork that you had to do, digital paperwork and things you had to do with the EU VAT stuff. It was just a total pain, and lots of people, including myself, pulled digital sales, direct digital sales, off our websites. But now I'm going back to it. And the reason why, two reasons. One, if you are in the UK, there is a dispensation so you can sell to other people in the UK without having to do the EU VAT stuff. And secondly, you can use a site like Sells, S-E-L-Z, sells.com. And you can actually check the box which says do not sell to EU countries. So apologies if you are in an EU country that is not the UK, but I won't be selling direct to those countries. Every other country in the world I can sell direct to, including the US and Canada, which is where a lot of my traffic comes from. So now on the Creative Pen and also JF Pen, you can now buy my books in Kindle and EPUB and PDF formats without going through any online bookstore. So I'm really pleased about that, because I think it's super important to be able to do that. It also means I can get back to doing my own audiobooks, which I'm going to do. I'm going to be recording, for example, How to Make a Living with Your Writing. I want to record that in audio and I'll sell that direct, not through ACX. because I can control the price then. I'm also going to sell bundles that you can't get on the stores. For example, a complete 8-book series bundle for Arcane. So that will be fun. So I'm looking forward to getting back into that. And although it was never a massive income stream for me, it will become a bigger one. I am also doing courses through Teachable as per an earlier January podcast. But if you have a live element to a course or you take questions, Q&A, you have a Facebook group, etc., it is not subject to that EU VAT. But Teachable also has an opt-in process for that EU VAT stuff. So hopefully that explains the situation. So thanks as ever for your emails and comments and tweets. I always love to get them. Laura Powers says, listening as I leave Mexico City to go to the Nashville Writers Fest, sent me a picture of a cool sculpture, and Mexico is totally on my list. It is happening. Definitely. I say definitely, but there's so many things on my list. Scott King said, all the cool kids were doing it, so I gave it a try. Better than peanut butter and jelly. Sent me a picture from the dentist. Yes, I think Scott, you're the third or fourth person who listens to the show at the dentist, and Scott's in Texas. Nancy Hendrickson said, listening to your podcast while sitting in the car wash. Great picture. And Nancy will be on the show in a few weeks' time talking about images in writing. And we had a really great chat. It's already recorded. I'm doing quite a lot in advance these days, so you can look forward to that. Mel Corbett says, eating a breakfast of champions while listening to the podcast. And the picture has a pot of Nutella with what looks like a jar of pickles. But Mel assures me it's a pickle jar full of tea. So that's very cool. Isaac Kochi says, loving the inspirational Michael Brent Collings episode while waiting for my plane at ZRH. And a little quiz for you here. Who can guess what ZRH is? Do you know? I'll give you 1 second. Okay, and maybe I'll come back to that. I'll just read the rest. Imogen Clark says, listening to my first podcast and trying to cram in the last of my 10,000 steps before it goes dark, sent me a lovely picture of a sunset over a lake. And Tim Niederreiter, it's official. I'm at River Rock Coffee for today's writing, listening to the show for my warm-up. Fantastic. And ZRH, if you didn't know, is Zurich Airport in Switzerland. Fantastic. Okay, so sorry if I didn't read out your comment or tweet. Please keep sending them. I love getting them. I love our conversation that we have as the show these days. And people tell me that they enjoy this segment too, because it's nice to hear from people all around the world who are listening to the show. So please do tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, what you're doing while listening to the show and any pictures of where you are in the world. Okay, so this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from our sponsor in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a huge thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And we've had a bit of a glut of new supporters this week. I think it might be to do with the fact that I just recorded the Patreon supporters extra audio. So if you like the Q&A format, you can get, I think we have 5 or 6 extra monthly Q&A audios. And if you join the Patreon supporters, you will get all of those backlist audio. So thanks especially this week to new patrons, Timothy Niederreiter, Garrett Robinson, Alba, Annette Marquis, Tracy Savage, Caleb Harmon, and V Burrows. Thank you so much to all of you, and also to everyone supporting on Patreon. It really means a lot to me and demonstrates that you want the show to continue. And if you'd like to join the Patreon support, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can support me by buying Destroyer of Worlds. Okay, let's get on with the interview.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark LaFave, Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations for Kobo. What is Kobo? Kobo is a global ebook company born out of Canada. Kobo is available in 190 countries around the world. Now, authors like Joanna Penn already are taking full advantage of the fact that while there may be certain players, world's longest river, that exist and are quite prominent in a few nations, Kobo is available and continuing to expand and grow in territories around the world. And one of the wonderful things about being a Kobo Writing Life author is when you look at that dashboard and you see that you sold a book in some country that you probably haven't heard of before. Check us out at KoboWritingLife.com. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
And today I'm here with Rosanna Atreya. Hi, Rosanna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Just a little introduction. Rosanna is the best-selling author of Tell a Thousand Lies, which was also shortlisted for the 2012 Tibor Jones South Asia Award. Her other works include The Temple Is Not My Father and 28 Years a Bachelor. She is also the Alliance of Independent Authors India correspondent, which is what we're talking about today. So, Rosanna, just for a starter, tell us a little bit more about you and how you got into writing.
I used to work in IT back when I lived in the US, and when I moved back to India, I had two little children, and you know, I just couldn't get to work at 3 a.m. if the network went down. So I was forced to look at something else, and I had always loved writing. So you know, I decided to give it a try, and once I started writing fiction, I was hooked.
Oh, that's fantastic. And how long ago was that now?
About 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. So 10 years ago. And so when did you get into being an indie author?
Actually, it's my story is a little different in that I did have a trade publishing contract, but you know, I'd been watching how things were being done in the US, and you know, watching Joe Conrath and Amanda Hawking, and I really wanted to give it a try. And people told me I was crazy to give up on a traditional contract, but I was like, you know, so if I fall flat on my face, I can write another book, and you know, look for another publisher. I really wanted to do it. And, you know, I have no regrets at all.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because I was in Australia when I first discovered Joe Conrath and, you know, Amanda Hawking, as you say. So similar time. It probably would have been 2009. I guess.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Similar time, right? So I think that's what's happened, is it did start in America and then it's kind of spread to other countries from then, which is fantastic. Now, we're going to talk about India today, obviously, because that's where you are. And many people, including me, really fascinated with India as a market. But I know many people will not have been to India. You know, I have a couple of times and I love it. And some people might have outdated views of the country based on media over the years. Could you just talk a little bit, for anyone who doesn't know, about like what is India like right now, the economic growth, number of educated English speakers, that type of thing?
Let me give it to you as points, a few different points. You know, I think movies like The Slumdog Millionaire do India a great disservice. Yes, we do have poverty, but we also have insanely rich people. And then there's also the rest of us, average middle-class people who live like other middle-class people around the world. And also in the Indian state that I come from, the joke goes that you first get an engineering degree, then figure out what you want to do with life. So, you know, as a result, I have a master's in engineering, as do a lot of authors from India. And there's so much social pressure to get a professional degree to, you know, to make sure that you can support yourself, your family. So, which is, it's odd, I know, but which is why you'll find that pretty much all the top selling authors in India have either engineering degrees or MBAs from really good schools. So, you know, they get this degree out of the way and then they decide that they want to be authors and, you know, they do it. And another fact for you, about 10% of our billion plus population speaks English. So that's a pretty big market for authors from outside and even from India, English people who write in English.
And I think it's a really good point. I mean, I have read that there are more middle class Indians who speak English who are therefore educated, because English is the main international language, isn't it, in India?
Right.
Because everyone speaks a different dialect, but English is the language that everyone in India kind of either speaks or is aware of.
The thing is that we have 35 official Indian languages and like 600 odd dialects. So, you know, you have to have a uniting language, and that's what English is. So, yeah. A lot of people speak English.
And obviously there's we won't go into the British Raj,
right.
but that's generally the reason. It's a historical reason why English is the language. And in fact, what's weird, if people come to India, a lot of the signs are in English, aren't they? A lot of the street signs.
They are, because, you know, otherwise if I were to go to say the state of Assam and they had it in Assamese, I wouldn't know what to do, because, you know, I don't know 35 languages. I know like four or five.
Yeah. So. Four or five, which is four more than I know. But that's fantastic. And yes, so what I was saying there are more educated middle class Indians who speak English than I think the whole population of the US.
Probably.
Which is kind of crazy, I think. As you say, so many very well educated Indians too. I'm always astounded at all the degrees. So let's talk about the current state of publishing and books in India. So how do people buy books? What languages are they in? What is the market like right now?
Okay, I'm big into points, so that's how I'm going to do it. So I'm sure you know this, but according to the India Book Market Report by Nielsen, India ranks second in the English language market in publishing after the US, but before the UK, so it's a pretty big market. And the interesting thing is that English books are sold in the newer, glitzier malls in India, and they're also priced higher. And, you know, if you want regional language books, you go to the, you know, corner mom and pop market store, shops. And so what kinds of books sell? Topping the list is really books to do with higher education, you know. So if you want to come up with a self-help book on how to get into top schools in the UK, that's something.
Ooh, that's an idea.
That might get you a leg in. And if you're looking at fiction, romance is big. And, you know, the really curious thing is all the top romance authors in India are men. And this is not, I mean, and they don't want to call it romance, so they call it campus lit. So it's all, you know, most of these are modern romances set on college campuses. And the other thing that is very big in India is Indian mythology. You cannot get away with from retelling in India. Retellings, and that's big business. And regional language fiction tends to weave stories against caste and social issues and, you know, those kinds of things. And the other thing is that fiction and regional languages are almost all print only, and they're printed on really cheap paper. So they're essentially treated as disposable commodities. So, you know, the ones that people want to keep, the hardbound ones, are traditionally religious or philosophical texts. And the other point I wanted to make was India's biggest selling author, Chetan Bhagat, who also has an MBA from an elite business school. He's put it to good use, really. So I think one of the reasons he does so well is that his paperbacks are priced to move, almost use and throw. So, you know, he makes his money on volume. And this morning I checked the price on his latest book, Half Girlfriend, on Flipkart. It is selling at 145 rupees, which is $2.15. And that's low even for India. So it's really hard to compete against that for indies. But, you know, so, I mean, because you would not make money on that. He makes his money on volume, but not to say that books that are priced higher are not selling. Jeffrey Archer is very big in India, as is, J.K. Rowling, and all the top international authors. They do sell well, and their books are priced higher. And I was also looking at novels from other publishers, and, you know, they're all priced around like $2 and $3. And the interesting thing is, and I think one of the reasons that ebooks haven't picked up in India as much is that they are, the publishers price them almost, you know, like say 20, 30, 40% lower than print books. So it's like they're driving people to the print books because they'd rather that people buy print books than ebooks, which, you know, doesn't make sense to me because you're in it for the money, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, that doesn't make sense to many of us, and it's crazy how that's happening. Like, a couple of things there. So first of all, I've read some of Ketan Bhagat's books, and he's great. Like, I really like them. They're actually quite short, aren't they? I would say they must be 60,000 words max. Like, they're not massive thick ones.
They're not 60 to, I would say, 90,000 tops. Yeah. So that's about that.
Yeah. And they're very, like you said, half girlfriend. I think I read the call center one, right. You know, young Indians meeting each other at call centers and clubs and things, right. But it's quite urban, like you say, what did you call it? Campus lit. It's right. Quite kind of urban young people. So just give people some other names of Indian authors that they might want to have a look at in the different genres so they could, you know, just find out more about them. So, and I'll put the links in the show notes.
Well, Durjoy Dutta is another campus lit author. Amish Tripathi is big in mythology. He's a huge seller. Ashwin Sanghi and Ashok Banker. These are all men and very big sellers. And I mean, there are a lot of literary writers as well, like Anjum Hassan. I adore her writing, but she's not very well known because it's literary fiction. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and do Indian authors sell widely in the other markets? So you mentioned Ashwin Sanghi, who I've heard is like the Indian Dan Brown. And yes. I've got one of his books. And like you said about the mythology, it's pretty dense on mythology rather than fiction. Like it's quite a kind of dense book. So do these authors sell well in the US, like an expat Indian market?
The expat market, yes, but I don't think mainstream America would buy that because, like you say, it's very dense, but they have a huge market in India. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, retellings do insanely well in India, yes. In the retelling of our mythology.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I equate that to the Christian market in the US, where the kind of retelling of Christian stories, that's basically what it is. What I was also going to note on the cover design, which is really fascinating. Now, I'm really hoping that at some point, indies will be able to load a different cover per country. Because if you look at, I looked at a lot of Indian book cover designs, a lot of them are more colourful, I would say, than, say, the British designs. Have you got any thoughts on cover design for the Indian market?
I think the reason, and the reason that is books set in India lend themselves to that. Those kinds of covers. My books have pretty colorful covers as well. And I guess because we wear very colorful clothes and, you know, you've been to India, so you know what I mean, that it's sort of, it's natural. It comes from there. So maybe that's part of that, you know?
That is a good point. I must say, I bought Indian saris to have clothes made out of them because we just don't have that kind of colour on our high streets in the UK. You know, I love Indian clothes. I always wish I could get away with a sari. But I'm not sure white girls can carry it, really.
Well, you have YouTube videos. You can practice.
I can practice. Yeah, that's a good point. To go back to is the digital market, because of course most indies are making most of their money out of ebooks. You mentioned it's not big at the moment, but 2016, you know, this year as we record this, Amazon's taken a jump into Indian e-commerce. Kobo's taken over Flipkart's ebook business. So what is happening in English in digital, and what's happening with mobile?
See, mobile is the way to go now because more Indians do, you know, most of the e-commerce in India happens on mobile apps and not on computers. So yeah, that is the way to go. And I'm really hopeful that something comes out of this, because there are a lot of players that have also jumped into this digital market. There's Daily Hunt, and they also do digital books in regional languages. And there's Rockstand, which is the other one, and Juggernaut. I'm really watching this closely, because the Chiki Sarkar, the woman, one of the people who started this, used to be the publisher of Penguin Random House India, and she quit to start this up. So, I mean, if she cannot get it going, I don't think there's much hope for the rest of us, you know. So she does know what she is doing, and we are watching her. So, and this is going to be an ebook only thing for now. I don't know if they'll come up with anything else later on. But they have an interesting model, as does Daily Hunt. Daily Hunt signed up Amish Tripathi, and he's another very big author. And what they're doing is they're selling chapters. So because a lot of people in India don't have credit cards, by some estimates about only 2% of the population does, and people are very wary of using credit. So what they do is that you use carrier billing. So now if you were to, so if you were to say buy a book on Daily Hunt, they don't want to price it too high that people, you know, don't, because it goes to your mobile carrier. So they are selling chapters in series at say 49 rupees, and they say they see a lot of market there. And even in regional languages, mostly Hindi, because that's such a big market, and Malayalam, that's the other language, and they say they have good sales that way. So
that's interesting. So these are micropayments, and what you mean by carrier billing is people get them on their phone and it's charged to their mobile phone account now. And this is what's going to happen in Africa, the rest of Asia, South America, because of the fact that people, that the mobile economy, right? Like even in India, in some of the poorest areas, you still will see people with a cell phone in the market, you know, selling some vegetables, but they'll still have a cell phone, because mobile, it might not be a smartphone yet, but it's, you know, people do mobile phone economy, don't they? So that seems to me the most obvious place for it.
Oh, absolutely. By some estimates, about 900 million people have smartphones, or actually there are 900 million smartphones out there. And according to statistics released by Daily Hunt, they say that up to 42% of people who own smartphones have done e-commerce transactions at least once. So, you know,
yeah,
that's pretty big. Big market out there.
And I listened to a documentary on Amazon India, and they were saying that in these areas where there is no, you know, where it's hard to get deliveries and stuff, like there might be one person in the village who has the smartphone, and then people will go to them and use their smartphone and get things delivered to the local place. It was fascinating. I'll link to it in the show notes. A really amazing documentary about how, although Indians, you know, doubt credit cards or don't have credit cards, they're still figuring out ways to do internet commerce.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And in such an entrepreneurial nation, I'm always impressed by pretty much everyone's an entrepreneur in India, right?
Oh, yeah. They find ways around things, you know.
Yes, exactly. They do find ways around things. But these micropayments, and you said selling volume, this to me is the way forward. It's not going to be selling a $12.99 ebook to Indians. It's going to be, like you say, a 49 rupee per chapter. So how do we get on Daily Hunt or this Juggernaut?
Juggernaut is really a traditional publisher. And in India, you don't need to go via literary agents. You can just submit directly. Though it really does help if you have the email addresses of the publishers. A lot of them will respond to you. And so that's really the way to go. And Daily Hunt actually has a submission process. So they you can just go to their website. I think it's submissions@dailyhunt.com or something. And they will get back to you. That's what they told me. I talked to them about that. So.
Okay, great. So have you used it yourself?
They have invited me, but I haven't gotten around to it. I will. That's on my to-do list.
Yeah, we all have these big to-do lists, obviously. Yes. Okay, so that's super. I'm very excited about that. So let's talk about print. There were obviously, and I, way back when I was in Australia, talked to Cinnamon Teal and Pothy, who I see are still the sort of people there. Create Space right now does not have an Indian setup, but I've heard rumors about it. Can you talk about print on demand in India?
See, the thing is that print on demand, though Cinnamon Teal and Pothy are good alternatives, they're still very expensive. Because if you were to price your book at, you know, what they give you, you would not be able to sell too many copies. So a lot of people that I know go to local printers and get their books printed, and then they've been trying to sell it from their websites because it's much cheaper that way. But what like you say, that there are rumors that CreateSpace is working out a deal to come to India and, you know, have a local POD. Ingram Spark is already doing that as well. Mm-hmm. So I am very hopeful about that. But, you know, the only thing is that, so that's a good thing. If they work with local printers, that's a good thing. It brings the prices down. So both for Indian authors and for non-Indian authors. So I'm waiting on that.
Yeah, no, I think it's really interesting. So just back on pricing. So you mentioned Aketan Bhagat fiction would be around 145 rupees, which is mm-hmm. for a full-length fiction. How much would a full-length non-fiction be, so that people know to put their pricing into Amazon and Kobo and iBooks?
No, non-fiction, self-help books, educational books, people are willing to spend. Okay, so you can price your books higher, you know, 300 rupees, 400 rupees, people will buy those books. So
that's
fiction
correct.
Is not, you know, anything that is to do with education, people will spend in India. So
I think that's true in general. I certainly price my non-fiction higher than my mm-hmm. fiction, because and as a reader, I always think if I get three things from this book, like that will help me in my life, then it's worth paying extra money for. So I see what you mean there. So yeah, nonfiction is a good idea. Also, I saw in one of the articles you've written about Vanity Press kind of springing up everywhere. What's happening with that?
You know, I have a big problem. Actually, I've written a huge post on that, and that's one of my most popular posts. And the problem is that a lot of people are unaware of what they're getting into, so they don't do research. And my problem is that these vanity publishing companies call themselves self-publishing outfits and confuse people, like, you know. And as I know, Ali carefully vets assisted publishing, and, you know, so and they do endorse them, but I don't know that we have such great deals in India. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, if you pay upfront and then you buy your ISBN from them, it's like they own your book, right? Because then they say they pay you royalties. So if you're both paying for the initial fees and then also getting royalties from them, I don't think that's a very good deal for authors. So, and you know, it is interesting that because we don't really have the same kind of regulation in India that the US has. I don't know about the UK because I've never lived there. So it makes it pretty sad, because I did a session on self-publishing at the Hyderabad Literary Festival last year, and an elderly gentleman stayed back after the session to talk to me, and his English was very shaky, so he spoke to me in Hindi, and he was close to tears because he said he published with one of the biggest vanity publishers in India, and it was associated with one of the biggest trade publishing companies, and they're no longer together. You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes.
So
we don't mention them by name, but yes, we know the one.
Exactly. So he said that they pursued him relentlessly when he first made contact, and unable to, you know, stand the pressure, he gave in and he published his book of poetry with them. And then he had at least 200 friends and family buy books from them, but the vanity publisher claims that no sales were made, and they've stopped taking his calls, they won't respond to his emails. emails. So, you know, and because he got the ISBN from him, he doesn't own rights to his book. So, yeah, I don't know. And a lot of vanity publishers who claim they're not vanity publishers, but they are really assisted publishers, they do pretty much the same thing. So as far as the Indian market is concerned, I honestly don't see a difference. So I'm very skeptical about that.
Yeah, but otherwise, Indian authors can publish through KDP. They can use Draft to Digital. You can use Kobo. There's no restrictions in that way.
Except for iBooks.
Except for iBooks, yeah.
Which you can go through Smash.
Draft to Digital, yeah, or Smashbook.
Right.
Yeah, so no, but that's good. And I'm excited to see, you know, a new sort of different voices. That's why I'm really keen to be talking to people. Like, I had an author from Nigeria on, and, you know, I want us to start reading different things, you know, all over the world. I think that's fascinating. Okay, so we talked a bit about the cell phone side of things, which is exciting. I read on another post that you wrote on the Alliance of Independent Authors that 50% of the Indian population is under 25. So what does that mean for writers and publishers?
This is the segment of the population that is internet savvy. They're most likely to have smartphones and they're comfortable downloading apps and using them. And like I mentioned before, most e-commerce in India happens on mobile phones as opposed to computers. So yeah, this is a very positive thing for indie authors if you're looking to sell in India. And the other thing is that, you know, you really need to look at different things, different strategies in India. WhatsApp is very big in India. So it's a mobile messaging app. So if you can figure out ways to leverage this, that, you know, that could get you some more visibility as well. So
yeah, WhatsApp, I must say, I've done one thing on WhatsApp, but I haven't used it loads. I also read that Facebook is actually surprisingly big in India.
It is. It really is. Facebook and WhatsApp are the big ones, yeah.
Okay, so how do you recommend that people use those sites for marketing to Indians specifically?
We are still figuring it out, quite honestly. And see, as of now, I mean, we have groups for I have a group for with my college friends and family and friends, you know, different groups like that. But authors are not using it as yet, and if you can be the first one to use it, I guess that can get you a leg in. So yeah. That's my goal for the next year, to figure these things out.
Oh, that's super. Well, we'll be excited about hearing back from you. So how is book marketing done at the moment then?
At the moment, book marketing is done through book bloggers. You just seek reviews from them and, you know, ask them to cross post to Amazon and to Goodreads. And the thing is that since Indian authors cannot upload directly to iBooks as yet, that's one advantage that non-Indians will have there if you've uploaded directly. Because, you know, if you have control over the dashboard, you can quickly move the price, raise the price up or down, or promote books that, you know, Indian authors don't have access to as yet. So that's another thing. But the other thing is that there is this still the stigma against indie authors. So you don't really have access to the same things that non-indies would in India. But my situation is a little different in that I was one of the first people to sort of adopt self-publishing and write about it in a major Indian newspaper, and sort of without intending to, I seem to have become the voice of self-publishing in India. So I do get a lot of visibility. So
which is fantastic, because, you know, you're intelligent, articulate, you've traditionally published, you're not like a rah-rah, you're not a Joe Conrath, actually, which makes you quite acceptable, I think, to the establishment in a good way, you know, because you speak at all these literary festivals, don't you, which generally don't invite indies.
They don't, yeah. But yeah, I've been to the Jaipur Literary Festival, which is the biggest festival in India. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I guess I've been really lucky that way. But then that only happens because I was the first person to do it, and I'm the most visible. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, more other indies don't really get that chance. But then a lot of other literary festivals are happening in India, and they're catching up. So I hope that more and more indies are invited there, and you know, things happen for them as well.
I want to come to Jaipur Literary Festival. It's one of my on my bucket list.
It's a madhouse, I tell you. It's a madhouse, and you know, it's like how you would authors get mobbed in India, and in the Jaipur Literary Fest, authors get mobbed. And I spoke to a couple American authors, and they were just astounded because they said this would never happen in America, and I do know that. So it's quite different. Authors are treated like celebrities in India. So if you make it big.
Yeah, if you make it big. Yeah. And what's interesting, I think there is a great respect, like you said about the education, there is a respect for people who write books that I think has kind of been lost in the West, which is nice. So I did want to ask you, about getting a traditional publishing deal in India. As you said, you don't need a literary agent, you can approach directly. I've seen you're also working with, is it Read Out Loud, another company?
That was only for my audiobook. Only for the audiobook. I had them produce my book.
Oh, okay. So tell us about how can, you know, if self-published authors like myself would actually rather sell rights, what would be the way to go about doing that for India?
You know, make a list of publishers in India, and you need to also talk to them about what kind of distribution networks they have, because there are multiple, because we have so many states and so many different languages. It's almost, you know, the English language segment has multiple distribution networks, and regional languages have their own. So if you're getting into translations, it's a little complicated. Really, you either need to be here or need to have an Indian contact to actually sell a lot of copies. I'm being a little honest here. But having said that, if you can get a trade publisher to, you know, just buy your Indian rights, they will take care of that for you. And since you don't have to go through literary agents, it's a little easier. But having said that, we do have literary agents in India as well. Mm-hmm. So you can go through them as well.
Yeah, no, I am interested. I think it's the print distribution, as you say, it's a very big country and complicated. And like you say, you kind of have to be there unless it's just digital. And at the moment, the digital sales are tiny. So this is the kind of thing. So what would you see as the next, you know, do you think it's going to take 5 years for digital to reach US volumes, or is it going to be 10 years? What's your opinion?
I hope 5 years, but Chiki Sarkar, the publisher of the owner of Juggernaut, let's say, she is, because she's involved, I'm hoping it's 5 years. And I'm really hoping and shooting for 5 years.
Yeah, no, that sounds good to me too. I do think that, you know, people, what's so lovely about talking to you is I think it's like 2009 in America. Do you sense that that's kind of where we are? It's almost like it's before self-publishing really takes off, before digital really takes off. You know, the Kindle has really only been out in India for not very long, right? And people, it's not a big chunk of the market yet.
It's not a big chunk of the market, even though they're aggressively promoting it. You know, they have big name authors selling it on TV. It may or may not take off, but e-books are here to stay because people, you know, like I said, most things happen on mobile apps, and you can still download an app for the Kindle or for your smartphone or an iBooks app, so you can still read it that way.
That's interesting. So yeah. The adverts, they're they're doing on TV, are they advertising the Kindle device or are they advertising the Kindle store so that people, are they saying you can get this on your phone type of thing?
They're advertising the device, not the store. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I wonder if they'll change the direction of that. Over time.
I hope so, because Amazon has recently applied for a semi-open digital wallet license. So that means they are looking to do more with ebooks, and I certainly hope, you know, they are able, we are all able to sell more ebooks that way.
Yeah. And what was I going to ask you? Oh, I know. And what about audiobooks? Is that happening at all yet?
Audiobooks are happening to some extent, but not as much as I would have liked. And see, the thing is that in the US, I don't know about the UK, but in the US, people go on long drives or workout, or, you know, that's where they listen to audiobooks. And in India, it's a little different because I don't know. I think another problem is that because most of everything that people do in India is on smartphones, there's also a lot of distractions. So, you know, you're reading an audiobook and someone pings you on WhatsApp or Facebook. So maybe people are buying less books because of that. But I hope the next 5 years are going to change this.
Yeah, exciting times. Yeah. Okay. Oh, and then my final question, you've talked a bit about how we can do various marketing, and I've mentioned before my next book, Destroyer of Worlds, is set in India. So I'm very excited about that and promoting it there. But obviously it's a mainstream thriller. Is there any paid advertising? I mean, you've talked about WhatsApp, Facebook. I mean, is doing Facebook ads a good idea in India? I mean, obviously the return is going to be unlikely, but if one wants to grow an audience, do you have any other specific tips, especially if a book is, you know, does have the Taj Mahal on the cover?
Right. Yeah. Well, Facebook ads is a good idea, and that's what I'm planning to do as well. And since you are so well known in indie publishing, I would suggest that you freelance articles for major Indian newspapers like the Hindu, the Times of India, the Hindustan Times. You'll get a lot of exposure that way. And if you sell your Indian rights to a local publisher with access to a good distribution network, that's important. That would be good too. The other thing is that there are a lot of distributors who are actually offering services. So they are offering to place your books in bookstores. And I'm still investigating this, and I do plan to do that myself, tie up with a distributor to have my books put in bookstores. And another thing that you could do is that Cinnamon Teal says that they can do audiobooks for as little as $100. Wow. So, yeah. So if your book is for the Indian market, you know, you can do it with an Indian editor, and it's really not a lot of money. So you could get some exposure that way as well.
In English or in Hindi?
In English too. Yeah. In English too.
How interesting. And that's actually really interesting, because there's a lot of Indians who speak English whose English sounds like my English, or, you know, it's not, or an American English. Yours is more American accented, I think, than British. But that's really an interesting point. I wonder whether it's worth looking into that in general for audiobooks.
I think so, because, you know, it doesn't really cost you that much. It's $100, right? Compared to an audiobook in the US or the UK, I'm sure it costs a lot more.
Yeah, well, it's a couple of thousand dollars usually. Yeah, that's fascinating. You've given us some really interesting things to think about. Is there anything else that you want to share before we go about the Indian market or anything else?
I just wanted to mention one more thing, that certain bookstores are also getting into this vanity publishing thing. So whether it's a good thing or bad thing, you can decide. So what they're doing is they're offering to place your books in their stores, chain stores, and some places are charging as much as $12,000, and they claim that, you know, you'll get premium placement. My concern with this is that, you know, because they're not vetting these books, obviously, you're not going to be placed alongside a Dan Brown or, you know, J.K. Rowling. So that means you'll probably get your own self-publishing section, which kind of devalues your books. On the other hand, if you can drive people to buy your books, I don't know, and they actually like it and read it, that might make a difference. So that's something new in India, and I haven't really heard of this in the US or the UK. So the bookstores doing that, chain stores.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. As you say, a chain store. I've heard of some independent bookstores doing that, but not chain stores like Borders, for example.
Right.
I mean, Barnes & Noble, Borders went bust, didn't they? Anyway, so tell us where people can find you and your books online.
I'm pretty much everywhere you can find books. I'm on iBooks and Kobo and Amazon. And I have a website as well. They can look at it, rasnaatreya.com. So it's rasnaatreya.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Rasana. That was great.
Thank you so much for having me here, Johanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.